It's good economic news for Britain. Sort of. Thursday's monthly GDP numbers show it just about managing to avoid slipping into recession, or at least not doing so before it's due to leave the EU at the end of October. There was a small fall in output in August, but on a three-monthly basis, GDP was 0.3% higher and beat all forecasts in a Reuters poll.
Scientists have found a way to make clean drinking water using algae. Teams in Bangladesh and Sweden harvested the organism locally and extracted what they call cellulose nanofibers to create paper filters. The pores are small enough to collect bacteria and viruses from dirty water. And they used a particular algae called Pithophora because it grows in huge volumes in Bangladesh, can be found in almost all freshwater habitats there.
GM's woes in China deepened in the latest quarter. Vehicle sales plunged more than 17%, down for the fifth straight quarter. Sales of its affordable Baojun brand plummeted nearly 35%. Buick sales also skidded, hurting General Motors as well as Ford, a sharp slowdown in China's economy amid the prolonged U.S.-China trade war. The American giants are also getting slammed by heightened competition in the mid-price sport utility segment. The U.S. share of passenger vehicle sales in the world's largest auto market fell below 10% in the first 8 months of this year, while their German and Japanese rivals gained share.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's October the 11th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got another business day getting underway here, and some big news happening in the world of business. We're going to be watching very closely what happens with the U.S.-China trade talks today. Futures markets are reacting to news that perhaps a deal could be on the way, but we've been there before. We'll have a conversation about that today with Paul Nolte, who's in from Kingsview in Chicago. We're going to talk to Paul about your money and some investment questions and some economic news from this week. Paul's going to be with us through the whole hour as well, and we'll take some of your calls about money and investments as we move forward here this morning. So get your questions and texts in quickly this morning for Paul. Paul, again, the whole hour this morning. We will also monitor the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic. We're going to have some big changing weather today, too, and that'll be coming up in our news and weather segments as well today. So stay with us as we begin for this Friday on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures up 242 points, nearly a full percent this morning. S&P futures are up nearly a full percent as well. NASDAQ futures are up about 87 points, a little bit more than a percent. Again, on trade news involving U.S.-China trade talks. In Asia, markets are generally positive as well. In Japan, ending up nearly 250 points for more than a percent. In Hong Kong, up nearly two and a quarter, but nearly 600 points. And in China, up nearly 0.75%. In Europe, markets are in the green as well. In London, up by nearly 0.25%. In Germany, up nearly 232 points on the DAX, nearly 2%. And in France, up nearly 1% on the CAC, up nearly 61 points. Again, futures are higher this morning after some positive talk about U.S.-China trade talks. The president telling reporters yesterday that trade talks between the two countries were going really well. He said he would also meet with the Chinese vice premier today at the White House. All of that came just a couple of hours after really contrasting trade-related headlines. One said that Chinese trade negotiators were preparing to leave early and skip yesterday's trade talks, but they ended up staying. There also have been some purchases of some agriculture products, so we'll talk to Paul about some of that as we bring him in this morning as well. Another headline from the ticker this morning, General Motors wants around-the-clock contract talks with the United Auto Workers to resolve the strike that began September 15th. That is in a letter from the automaker's vice president of labor relations to the UAW. The GM CEO this week asked the UAW committees to give the company's company a comprehensive proposal to settle the strike. There was no inflation last month, which has investors hoping it'll lead to another interest rate cut later this month by the Fed. The consumer price index was flat in September, which is the smallest change since January. Economists had been expecting an increase of 0.1%. Paul Nolte is with us this morning. Paul is a senior vice president at Kingsview Wealth Management in Chicago, and Paul's with us every Friday to talk about the economy and our portfolios and our money. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome back to Friday.
Yes. The temperature I mentioned in the opening is going to drop about 30 degrees today, is what everybody's saying. So,
but it looks like it's pretty warm on Wall Street. So, again, as you mentioned in the opening montage about the trade talks, and the markets really have been roiled by the news items. We have a trade deal. We don't have a trade deal. They're staying. They're leaving. And that's really been the backdrop for the markets. It's not about the economy. It's not about earnings, and we start earnings season next week with a lot of the bank earnings. It is strictly about trade, and that's what's moving markets these days.
We have been here before, though, in a way. I mean, how many times have we seen a tweet by the president or heard something from his team that indicates that things are going well and we may be close to a deal, only to have the rug or the football pulled out from our kick? How should we, as investors, and I'm being serious about this because it's happened a number of times, how, as investors, should we push up to this? Because it looks like Wall Street is pretty positive about it.
Oh, absolutely.
But and what happens if nothing happens?
The markets will probably drop 300-400 points. And that's the difficult part of this is, in talking to clients about it, is to take the politics out. Let's not talk about the trade deal, whether there is one or there isn't one. Because it really will not have an impact on stocks immediately, or certainly earnings. We're just now starting to see the impacts of trade a year and a half after a lot of the tariffs have been imposed. So it's going to be a long time before we see the benefit of the trade deal that we get. We don't know what it looks like. It sounds as though this may be trade deal light, as opposed to an all-encompassing trade deal that's going to incorporate a lot of the technology issues that have been going on for quite some time. And we've even heard comments from the administration about, well, you know, we're going to sanction this company, that company. We're not allowing this to happen. And then throw on top of it the NBA issue for this week. So, again, taking all of that away, investors really need to be looking at the underlying companies that they're investing in, or sectors or industry groups that they're investing in, as opposed to the politics of the day as to whether we're close to a deal, don't have a deal, or what the case may be.
It's interesting that you say a partial deal or a trade deal light. What would that look like?
And my guess is, you know, we've talked about agriculture, and that seems to be the focus right now. China's hurting for soybeans. They've been buying some here in the United States. They're hurting for pork production or pork products because of the pork issues that they have. Their pig population is down significantly because of problems that they have with their population and disease. So that's their focus right now, is they need to feed their population. And so that's, I think, really where they're focused at this point, not so much on the technology side.
President has set October 15th as another deadline to increase tariffs again, I believe up to 30%, right? So if nothing happens today, that's the next milestone.
It could be, and it could be that, you know, he uses that as a carrot and says, you know, we'll postpone that because trade talks are going well. We've heard that before as well. You know, coming into the Christmas, we're not going to have tariffs on these particular products because of the upcoming Christmas season. We don't want to hurt consumers. So, again, there's you can't figure out what's going to happen next or how this thing is going to turn next. And as an investor, you'd like to have some confidence in what you're investing in and what you're looking at. And that's why it's important to go back to the companies and go back to the mutual funds, ETFs that you're investing in, and understand what it is that you own, maybe some of the impacts of trade, but, you know, how do the companies look on their own from an investment perspective?
Right. And even if you're not in the stock market and an investor, if you're just a consumer, you will be watching the developments today, too, because you have probably been paying higher prices for some things, especially at the grocery store. And if a tariff increase goes into effect, that could impact your Christmas shopping at Walmart and Target.
Oh, absolutely. And we saw, you know, actually some imposition of tariffs with your products, so wine and other products like that. So we will see those impacts over the course of the next quarter, two quarters or so. Just as we saw with aluminum and steel prices over a year ago, it takes a little while for that to work its way into the economy and show up on the shelf. And it depends, too, on whether companies eat some of that cost or they pass it along to consumers. What we're seeing from the CPI and PPI numbers that you highlighted earlier, not a lot of it is making it down to the consumer level. But even with that said, the core CPI now is still running a little bit ahead of 2%. So it is above the Fed target rate of 2%, even though the headline number was essentially zero.
Paul Nolte is with us today from Kingsview Wealth Management in Chicago. Paul and I are going to chat some more about the economy. We're also willing to take your calls. We're going to put Paul on the spot this morning. If you've got money and investment questions, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can call us up or text us in a question for Paul, and we'll take those questions as we move forward this morning here on the Opening Bell. I know, Paul, people often like to get texts in because sometimes money questions are personal, so we are happy to take your anonymous text questions if that's what it takes. 312-981-7200. Paul, you mentioned before the break the Federal Reserve, the interest, consumer price index, the inflation numbers right around their target. Does that mean they'll stay put on the next meeting?
Probably not. There's right now about an 80-85% chance that they're going to cut rates at the end of this month at their next meeting, and the expectation is that they will again and before the end of the year. They cited concerns about economic growth, and not just here in the United States, but globally. So looking at the ISM numbers, the manufacturing numbers especially, are in contraction mode around the world. And we're seeing a slowdown in the U.S. We're not calling it a recession. It is a slowing in growth. So we're not quite to a recession yet. And the Fed is looking to hold that off by cutting interest rates. The interesting part of that is we've had essentially zero interest rates for 10 years. And that doesn't necessarily translate to higher inflation. So some of what they're looking at and the metrics that they're using maybe broke in this particular recovery because of the way this recovery has unfolded and what the Fed and central banks around the world have done in the past here to stave off the Great Recession 10 years ago.
I was reading through the Fed minutes this week from their last meeting, and they are very concerned about the trade situation. That's on their minds quite a bit. I'm curious what the trade, if we do get some sort of trade deal today, you know, how will that impact the Fed?
I don't think it will, because again, it won't show up in the economic data for probably 3 to 6 months. But it could have an impact then come spring, summer of next year if the economy does pick up. And that's the expectation, is that a trade deal would allow the U.S. and China to trade and allow economic activity to pick up, because we now have some certainty with some kind of a trade deal between the U.S. and China. So that probably won't impact, again, the rate cuts that are anticipated at least this year, but could have an impact early next year.
It's interesting that we've had these cuts in interest rates over the last couple of months now. And I saw this report yesterday, average retail credit card interest rates up to 26%. Shouldn't they be going in the other direction?
They should. However, when you take a look at mortgage rates, you look at credit card rates, it becomes a little bit more of a supply and demand. You know, who are more likely to be using credit cards and who have carry balances, et cetera. Banks are trying to hedge their losses for those that don't pay their credit card or don't pay on time. So they will set those interest rates at a rate that is profitable for them, whether it's a bank, Visa, MasterCard, Discover. So they do set those rates fairly high because of that, because of the incident of losses and trying to cover those losses for those that aren't paying their credit card debt.
If you have a credit card and you have one of these high interest credit cards, we keep talking about investments a lot. Mm-hmm. One of the best investments you can make is to pay that sucker down.
Absolutely. You know, making the minimum payment is not going to get it done. So if your minimum payment is $100 a month, you really want to try to get $300-$400 a month to pay that credit card down, because that essentially is at a 20% rate of interest. You're making 20%. You're avoiding that 20% charge. So your money is definitely doing a heavy lifting by paying off that credit card as opposed to saying, okay, I'm going to add to my 401k or increase my savings. You really want to get that credit card down to zero.
From the 815, ask Paul if 4% annual drawdown of diversified retirement funds is still considered reasonable if those funds are invested so that their annual increase at least matches cost of living.
Prima facie, I would say yes. You know, again, what is your cost of living? So everybody's cost of living is a little bit different. If you're in your 50s, 70s, 90s, you know, as I tell my clients, when you get into retirement, your expenses are pretty high initially because you're doing all the things that you didn't do, couldn't do when you were working, traveling, going places, et cetera, and that lasts a few years. And then that kind of falls off and your cost of living is actually fairly low. And then it'll pick back up again as you start increasing your medical expenses. So as long as your 4% distribution is covering your bills and taking care of your costs, again, medical costs are going to be the biggest cost in retirement that you're going to have, especially the later in retirement that you go. You should be okay. Again, 4% might be a little bit on the high side. You know, if you're looking at treasury bills at 1.5% rate of return, the equities have to be a 6% rate of return in order to cover that, 6.5% rate of return to get you a 4% rate of return for a 50-50 portfolio. So, again, that has happened certainly over the last 10 years, but going forward, it's going to be a harder bogey to get because of where interest rates are.
Our next question from 262, from the area code 262, is a good one, and I've often thought about this. How much should you expect to earn on an investment? So when you buy a stock, what should be the performance, I guess, barrier or the bar for that? And then the question goes on to say, when is it a suitable time to sell an investment? So what is the warning sign that you'd do to sell an investment?
I'll go back to the standard answer. It depends. So when we take a look at a specific stock, we have a range of valuation. So we take a look at historical valuation ranges. Where does the stock normally trade, both on a dividend yield basis or a price to earnings basis? Let's say, for example, ABC company trades somewhere between 10 and 12 times earnings. And when things are really good, it gets up to 18 to 20 times earnings. So we take a look at that and we will project based on this year's earnings and next year's earnings where that range is, both a 10 to 12 buy range and then say an 18 to 20 sell range. So you have to take a look, and each company has their own fingerprint, if you will. So not all companies trade at 10 to 12 and then 18 to 20. So you want to take a look at the history of that particular company to see where it's been trading at. And again, when you're looking at the PE ratio of, say, the S&P 500, right now it's at the high range. It's at the high end of its historical norm. So we're not expecting a lot in the way of rate of return here. If the markets were to crash and go down 30, 40%, I know everybody would get very excited about it. It would be catastrophic for a lot of people. But at that point, the future rate of return is much higher because it's the price of this of the market is much lower. So with the stock market up where it is right now, the future does not look as bright as it did, say, 6-7 years ago.
Paul, from a money management, just if let's say we're not in the stock market, what's one of your top tips for starting to save money today? What would be a good thing to do right now?
Yeah, for a lot of people, I mean, that's the first hurdle is, you know, I want to be able to put money into a 401k. I want to build up my savings, but geez, it's all going right out the door. And then my next question is, well, where is it going? And a lot of times the answer is I'm not quite sure. And so there's a couple of techniques that we have for clients. One is to go very old school. Take a little notebook with you, a pen, and write down everything that you spend for a month. And I know it gets really tedious because, you know, you're like, I'm going to Starbucks for $6. I got to write that down. Yep. You got to write that down and then review it over the course of the following month. And where have you spent money on? Where did all of that money go? And it becomes, because you're writing it down and you're taking that effort, it becomes a little bit more real. I've got some clients who say, well, I do everything online. I see it all online. It goes into Mint, whatever it is. I said, but take the effort to write it down. Because then because you understand it, it becomes a little bit more ingrained in your head. And then you see, you know, for example, if I'm spending $7 a day at Starbucks, okay, well, you know, do the math on that. That's $35 for the business week times four. You're talking about $130, $140 at Starbucks every month. Maybe I go out and buy a really nice coffee machine and a nice travel mug, and I stop going to Starbucks, and I save that money, you know, once I cover the cost of my the machine and stuff. So you can start to see where all this stuff is going and make some changes in how you're going about spending those dollars.
You probably don't even know that you're losing money in one of those places. You probably, you know, whether it's at the spending extra at the grocery store or stopping for fast food or something like that, you just probably don't even know where it's going.
You don't. In a lot of cases, you know, and certainly my younger clients today, it's a debit card. You know, it's a swipe. And so, you know, and I equate that to kind of going to the casino. That's why they give you chips. You don't put a $20 bill on the table to play blackjack. You turn that in for chips, and you throw out those chips as though there's no meaning to it. So in those cases, I tell people, I said, give yourself an allowance. Give yourself a $50, $100 a week, whatever that is, allowance. Both spouses get that. And that's the no BS money. So that's the money that you can't come back to say, well, you're spending money on this or that. And those, it's the $10 and $20 a week types of charges that get people in trouble. It's not the $1,000 purchase. It's not the big purchase, because those are usually discussed beforehand. It's the you're always doing this or you're always doing that type of money. And that, you know, it gets alleviated by saying, okay, you get $50 or $100 a week. If it's gone by Wednesday, you're done. That's it. You don't get to draw any more money out until Saturday or Sunday. But that also helps alleviate some of the nickel and dime stuff as well.
Yeah, and who gets to decide which spouse hands out the money every week?
Well, I mean, that part I'm not getting into, but yeah, you each make a trip to right. the ATM on Saturday, get your $100 and go.
Right.
But it takes away a lot of the little stuff, and it's the petty stuff that really get couples in trouble.
Here's a question from the 847. Is it safe to invest in small cap stocks? Do you like those?
We've stayed away from small cap stocks over the last 4 or 5 years because the valuations on them have been pretty high. The rates of return have been very similar to the S&P 500, so it didn't make sense to do it. They have really gotten trashed, surprisingly, with all the trade war talk. You would think that hiding in companies that pretty much invest or sell to domestic people, companies, would be immune to trade tariffs. But they've performed very, very poorly relative to the S&P 500. So they've gotten pretty cheap now, again, relative to everything else. We'd like to see that performance pick up relative to the S&P 500 before we start to make an investment. But it's something that we're starting to look at, especially small cap value is very inexpensive here. So it's an area that we're looking at. We haven't committed dollars to, but it's certainly on our radar screen.
I haven't talked to you since the last jobs report, and I know there was some jobs news this week as well. The job openings and labor turnover survey shows some more manufacturing losses in the Midwest specifically. The job data still looks good, but we're seeing some weakness.
We are seeing weakness, and it's not a surprise that we're seeing it in manufacturing because the manufacturing ISM data globally as well as in the U.S. is in contraction mode. Services are still above 50, but manufacturing is well below 50 at this point. So we are seeing losses in the manufacturing sector, and certainly the Midwest is a pretty big source of manufacturing jobs. So that's not necessarily a surprise. When we look at the country as a whole and we look at the weekly jobless claims data, which gives us a little bit better indication of where the job market is, that's still running pretty close to a 50-year low. And although the number was a little bit below expectations, they revised higher the back months. So when we take a look at it, we're running at about 150,000 new jobs. This is down significantly. We were running 200 or more this time last year, but it is still at a rate that is absorbing any new entrants coming into the market looking for a job. So that's part of the reason why the job number, the unemployment rate, actually came down, because we are taking in a lot more people than the population is growing.
Yeah, and when we hear the analysts say that government hiring was a big part of that, what do we mean by that? Is that the census?
Some of it is the census. Some of it is, you know, other government jobs. And in general, the government's been pretty slow as far as hiring over the last year and a half. A lot of the job gains have come from the private sector. But there is the ramp up for census. This month, it wasn't as much as there has been in the prior 2 months. But again, that's something that we'll take a look at. And we generally try to reverse those numbers out for the census workers, because we know that once the census is done, they come out of that workforce.
And I was disappointed again at the wage numbers. We, after gains all year long, we sort of backpedaled a little.
A little, but we're still running at a better than a 3% annual clip. So on a year-over-year basis, when we look at wage growth compared to a year ago, we're still running above 3%. Historically, that's between 2 and 4%. So we're midpoint, slightly above midpoint. And again, when we look at the inflation data, it's running at less than 2 or 2-ish. So wage gains of 3%, inflation running at 2, generally pretty good for the consumer. Part of the reason why we're seeing retail sales and consumer sentiment at very high levels at this point, because the consumer does have money to spend and is making more money than inflation. So in general, when you're looking at the three components, corporations, government, and consumers, the consumers of those three are actually in much better shape right now than they've been over the last 10 years.
I know it's still early. We were in October, but it is the fourth quarter. And so that's for you, I know that's a busy time, but for the rest of us too, we should be thinking of all kinds of things: budgeting, getting documents together, a lot of end of year things we can start doing now.
There's a ton of things. So a couple things that we generally do toward the end of the year is make sure that we've taken IRA distributions. So if you're age 70 and a half this year or older, you need to take your required distribution out of an IRA account. So we usually do that in the fourth quarter. But you're going to make sure that that gets done. Otherwise, you get penalized for that. We'll look through accounts. So we'll tell clients, take a look at your statements. You bought and sold stuff over the course of the year. We may have taken some gains or losses in places. So we'll look at portfolios. If we've taken some gains earlier in the year, we may have some losses that we can offset in the fourth quarter. So we'll take those to reduce the overall tax bill. We may take a look at, you know, how much are you contributing to your 401k? Are you getting the match from the company that you should be? Are you taking full advantage of that? How have you been able to save over the course of the year? Can you bump up your 401k contribution a little bit? And then finally, the last thing is, what are you doing with charities? Are you doing any charitable contributions? Maybe we have Apple. We've owned it for 10 years. We have it at a very low cost basis. Instead of selling Apple and writing a check to the charity, give them some of the shares of Apple, because then you avoid that sale. The charity sells the stock. They don't have to pay capital gain. You don't pay capital gain. You get credit for the full amount that you gave them. So if you give them 10 shares at $200 a share, that's a $2,000 contribution to that charity. You don't have to pay tax on a gain of selling that stock and then turning it over to the charity in a form of a check.
That's a great idea. Paul, so as we wrap things up here this morning, do we hold? What's our position today on the market?
You know, we've been generally kind of cautious here. As we've talked about, from a longer-term perspective, valuations are still kind of high. We still do like the international markets. That is a part of the investment world that is very cheap. And from a long-term perspective, and we're talking 3 to 5 years, returns should be much better in the international markets than the U.S., although that has not been the case over the last year and a half or so. We still do like bonds. And again, it's a good offset to stocks. So if the stock market decides to go down because we don't have a trade deal, the bonds are going to do very well in that environment. So we try not to be all in on the stock market and have a nice balanced portfolio here.
Well, we appreciate you spending some time with us today and taking some of our listeners' questions. If people are listening and they have more they want to talk to you about, how can they get on with you one-on-one?
They can drop me an email. Is probably the easiest way to do it. And the email address is pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can continue the conversation there.
All right. We appreciate it. Paul, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Wealth Management in Chicago. Paul's a senior vice president there. He's with us every Friday here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. In a big way, Dow futures up 245 points. nearly a full percent on S&P and NASDAQ futures as well. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The Department of Agriculture issued its monthly crop report yesterday. Its estimates of corn and soybean production. And again, we're getting a lot of controversy over the numbers in that report issued yesterday. It raised its U.S. corn yield estimate to 168.4 bushels per acre. That's up from 168.2 in September. The projection of the corn crop, 13,779,000,000 bushels, down slightly from September, as a reduction in harvested acreage offset the higher average yield. But the report put soybean production at 3,550,000,000 bushels, down from 3,633,000,000 in September, and lowered the soybean ending stocks forecast to 460,000,000 bushels. That's down from 640,000,000 bushels last month, and the soybean yield estimate, 46.9 bushels per acre, and that's down from 47.9 bushels per acre in the September report. And of course, you know how the market reacted yesterday. We saw corn futures down 14.25 cents. Wheat futures were also down 9 cents a bushel, but November soybeans ended down just a penny and a quarter. And in livestock futures trade yesterday, the December lean hog contract down 92 cents a hundredweight, the October live cattle contract up 45 cents, and the October feeder cattle contract unchanged. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, October the 11th, import and export prices for September are due out today. Trade analysts forecast a decline of 0.2% in the price of imported goods and 0.1% drop in the price of U.S. products exported to other countries. Also today, a preliminary estimate of the October Consumer Sentiment Index is out. Economists expect to see a retreat from September's final figure. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, October the 11th.